I want to get on into our lesson tonight, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk about the subject that has been assigned. As we've been looking really at the subject thus far of love. Last week, Ron talked about reviving your love for God, and tonight we're going to look at reviving your love for Jesus. Ultimately, though, we're talking about love, but not just any love. We're talking about a very specific type of love that is focused in a very specific direction. You see, love can be a very powerful force, can it? Love can be, if it's misdirected, it can be very destructive. And if it's directed in the right way, it can be very productive. It can be very powerful in many respects. Love can motivate, it can encourage, it can cause people to move forward in ways that they wouldn't without it. And yet, we often have a tendency to focus on a certain type of love, and that is emotional love. Emotional love is also powerful, and yet, what happens with our emotions? They go up and they go down. And so emotional love can change just like the wind, can it? It's going to go up and it's going to go down. And if everything that we have in our love bank, so to speak, is all based on emotion, then we're going to have problems, aren't we? You know, a couple weeks ago, my wife had spent all day cleaning the house. We were having company. She cleaned the house from top to bottom. She had cleaned the carpet. She even got out the carpet cleaner. She did the whole nine yards cleaning that house. Well, I was out working in the yard. And I, of course, looked the part for working in the yard. And I came in the house and, you know, I was just intent on getting a shower. And so I really wasn't paying attention. And evidently, she claims that I tracked dirt all the way through the house to the bathroom and that I made a complete mess of the bathroom. Now, do you think she felt some emotions toward me? Yes, she did. And they were not positive emotions, at least not from my standpoint. She was pretty positive. But I was very thankful at that moment that her love for me is not completely based on emotion. Because if it were, I would probably not be speaking to you tonight. You see, our emotional love is like that, isn't it? Our boys, as already mentioned, we have two boys, Andrew and Caleb. Andrew will be 18 in August, and because of that, we have a tendency to have a lot of teenagers in and out of our house. And I actually enjoy that, and I enjoy listening to them talk. Oftentimes, I'll sit off in the living room or kind of hide in the kitchen and just listen to the conversations. And not long ago, one of the young ladies that was there was talking about one of her former boyfriends. And evidently, this group of kids had gone out to eat, and this former boyfriend had been with them when they went out to eat. And she was talking about him. She said, you know, he is just so obnoxious. How can anybody stand to be around this guy? He is embarrassing, just the way that he acts. And one of the other girls that was there, she said, well, you didn't seem to think so for the 2 years that you dated him. And she said, but I guess maybe since you were in love, you didn't notice. And this girl's response was, I didn't love him, I was just stupid. But you see, that's what emotional love does, doesn't it? It hides. It has a tendency to blind us. Well, tonight, I want us to think about and consider probably one of the most important questions that you can be asked. And think about emotional love as you answer this to yourself. Do you love Jesus? Do you love Jesus? I would venture to guess that if I were to ask for a show of hands, and I'm not going to, but if I were to ask for a show of hands, I would venture to guess that every single person in here would raise your hand. And I believe that everyone in here has some level of love for Jesus Christ. Otherwise, why would you be here? What would be the purpose? And I think all of us feel some level, some type of love for Christ. And so we would likely all raise our hands. However, if I were to ask the question, Do you love Jesus as much as you should? Or do you love Jesus as much or more than you did the day you became a Christian? My guess is that not as many people would raise their hands. Why? Because we have a tendency to judge our level of love based on the emotion that we're feeling. And oftentimes we think that because our emotions aren't high, then our level of love is not high. Now, we have someone in Scripture that struggled with this as well, and that is, of course, Peter. If you'll turn in your Bibles to John chapter 21. John chapter 21 will be our text tonight, beginning in verse 15. We want to set the stage here for what is about to take place. This is after Peter has denied Jesus three times. Leading up to Jesus' crucifixion upon the cross, Peter had the opportunity to proclaim Jesus three times. And each time that he had the opportunity to proclaim Jesus, he chose to deny him. But then, following that, we of course have the crucifixion of Jesus upon the cross. We have his burial in the tomb, and 3 days later he rose from the dead. And now, being risen from the dead, he has appeared to his disciples. And this particular occasion we come to in John 21 is the third time. And having set that tone, let's begin reading in verse 15. It says, "So when they had eaten breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, 'Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me more than these?' He said to him, 'Yes, Lord, you know that I love you.' He said to him, 'Feed my lambs.' He said to him again a second time, 'Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me?' He said to him, 'Yes, Lord, you know that I love you.' He said to him, 'Tend my sheep.' He said to him a third time, 'Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me?' Peter was grieved because he said to him the third time, 'Do you love me?' And he said to him, 'Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you.' Jesus said to him, 'Feed my sheep.'" Now, we're all familiar with this, of course, but we know that in Scripture there are three specific Greek words that are all translated typically as love. And yet each one has a very specific and different meaning. In this particular passage, there are two Greek words that are used here. And as a source of review, the word that is used, first of all, is the word agapes, which is a form of the word agape. It is a deep-rooted, strongly committed type of love. It is a love that is steadfast. It is a love that is firm. It is a love that is unchanging. Now let me ask you, is it a love that is based on emotion? Is agape love based on emotion? No. But if you have agape love, will there be emotion? Yes. So there's a definite difference, isn't there? You know, it is not based on emotion. And yet, if you have agape love, you will feel emotion. Agape love is a love that God has for us. Agape love is a type of love that we should have as husbands and wives for our spouses. It is a type of love that a parent should have for their child. It is a deep-seated, a strongly committed love. The other type of love that is mentioned here, the other Greek word, is philo. Its root form is phileo. And it is the idea of just having a strong affection for. In other words, you have strong, firm feelings, and yet it's not to the level of agape. Now, there's a young man in your congregation that I have grown to love over the last couple of years. His name is Shay. He is not here tonight because I've been told that he was dragged kicking and screaming onto a cruise ship. But I have grown to love Shay. I love him for his commitment. I love him for his character. I appreciate him for a lot of different reasons. But I do not have the same level of love for Shay that I have for my children, Andrew and Caleb. I do not have the same level of love for him that I have for my wife. I have a strong affection for Shay. I've deeply committed to him and from the standpoint that if he ever had a need, I would be right there for him. If he ever called me or sent me a message on Facebook, nobody calls me anymore, they just message me. But if I got word from him that he needed help, I would be right there. I have a strong affection for him. But I can't say that I have an agape type of love for him. I don't know him that well. But you see, these are two distinct levels of love. Now, based on those definitions, let's look at this passage a second time. But we're going to replace the word love for the appropriate Greek word that is used here. Verse 15, so when they had eaten breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of Jonah, do you agape me more than these? He said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I phileo you. He said to him, feed my lambs. Jesus says, Peter, do you have a total commitment to me? Peter says, Lord, you know that I have a strong affection for you. What is Jesus' response? Feed my lambs. Verse 16, he said to him a second time, Simon, son of Jonah, do you agape me? He said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I phileo you. He said to him, tend my sheep. So a second time, Jesus says, do you have a total commitment to me? And Peter says, Lord, you know that I have a strong affection for you. Jesus says, tend my sheep. Verse 17, he said to him a third time, Simon, son of Jonah, do you phileo me? Peter was grieved because he said a third time, do you phileo me? And he said to him, Lord, you know all things. You know that I phileo you. Jesus said to him, feed my sheep. We often misunderstand this particular verse and what is meant here because we just look at the word love and we don't look at the type of love. We often think that Peter's just frustrated because Jesus has asked him the same question three times. But Jesus has not asked him the same question three times. Jesus changed his question. Jesus went from saying, Peter, do you have a total commitment to me? To saying, Peter, do you at least have a strong affection for me? That's what grieved Peter. And while the scriptures do not tell us specifically, I believe that it's likely because it finally hit Peter. He finally realized that his level of love was not what it should be. But we want to break this down tonight and we want to look at specifically each point that is made. First of all, there's a question. And that is, do you agape me more than you do the others? Do you love me more than anyone else? Now, did Christ need to know that answer? Did he really need to know that? He already knew, didn't he? Christ knew the answer, and yet he wanted to communicate a message to Peter. He was trying to get something across to Peter. And the real question for Peter is your love for Christ any greater than the love that you have for everyone else? Peter, do you love me more than you love Thomas? Peter, do you love me more than you love John? Peter, do you love me more than you love Stephen? Peter, do you love me more than all of these? And I think that's an important question for us to consider because it is a valid question for us today as well, isn't it? The question for us today is, do you love Christ more than all of these? Well, what's all of these for us? All the people we come in contact with, all the things that we encounter in life, all the things of the world. Do you love Christ more than you love all of these, or is Jesus on a level playing field with everyone else? I personally believe that that is one of the reasons why we struggle so much in the church with going out into the things of the world. There are a number of reasons, but I think one of the reasons is we kind of have the attitude that, well, you know, I can love Jesus and I can love all of these things too. There's plenty of love to go around. And so I can give my love to Jesus and I can love the things of the world and everything is going to be just fine. A couple of years ago, we had a young man come to our week of camp that was a college rep. He was from one of the Christian colleges, and basically he spent his summer going from week of camp to week of camp to week of camp, promoting that particular Christian school. And he was a good guy, he was a good young man and did a good job, but he had gone several weeks to Central Florida Bible Camp, and because of that I kind of knew what had been going on, and I had heard that at each week of camp he had found himself a girlfriend. And none of the girlfriends seemed to know about the others, but he had a girlfriend from each week. And he got to our week of camp, and sure enough, he hooked up with one of the young ladies and started forming a friendship, we'll say. And so I just went up to him. I said, you know, I've heard that you've got several girlfriends now. And I said, you might want to be careful, because you could easily get yourself in some trouble here. And he smiled and he said, Mr. Bill, that's people don't call me Mr. Weaver, they call me Mr. Bill. And you can make jokes about the Mr. Bill show later. But he said, Mr. Bill, he said, I can't be held down to just one girl because I've got so much love to give. One girl just couldn't handle all of that love. Well, and there's another story to that I won't tell about when all these girls found out. But needless to say, the point is that we have a tendency to live our lives in a similar way. We have a tendency to live our lives in thinking that, you know, I can love this stuff in the world, and that's okay. As long as I show up for church, as long as I go through the motions, as long as I give Jesus the things that he tells me I have to give him, 3 times a week plus a few extra activities here and there. As long as I fit those things in, then I can love the things of the world and I can love Jesus too. But is that acceptable to Jesus? You see, the type of love that Jesus requires from us is the type of love that cannot be shared. It is a type of love that requires total commitment. If you will, flip over in your Bibles to Matthew 10 and verse 37. Matthew 10 and verse 37, where Jesus says, he who loves father or mother more than me is not what? Worthy of me. And he who loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. That's an important word there, isn't it? Jesus is saying, if you cannot put me first, then you're not worthy of a relationship. Jesus accepts nothing but a totally committed form of love. Now, does that mean that I cannot love my biological family? Of course not. I love them, but I love them in the context of my love ultimately for Jesus Christ. There are things in this world that are good and enjoyable. And I can take part in some of the things that go on in this world as long as they fit in the context of my love ultimately for Jesus Christ. You see, it's all about where my commitment lies. And Jesus asked the question to Peter, Peter, how much do you really love me? Do you love me more than you love all of these others? But then we have a command. It is not a suggestion. It is a command. Jesus says, Peter, do you love me? Peter says, yes, I have a strong affection for you. Jesus says, feed my lambs. Now, the emphasis in this first command is on the idea of feeding. It's on the emphasis is on the act of feeding. Now, what does feeding do? If we feed somebody or something, what does it do? It provides, I heard, nourishment. What else? What? All right, it sustains life. So it provides nourishment, it sustains life, it provides strength, it refreshes us. And so feeding is essential in our lives, isn't it? Now, there's an important element here, though, because Jesus tells him to feed his lambs. Why? Because they needed nourishment. There was a need that was there. In Matthew 5 and verse 6, Jesus says, "Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be filled." There is an assurance that comes there, that doesn't, isn't there? There's a promise. But now, how does Jesus do the filling? He says, if you hunger and thirst for righteousness, you will be filled. Now, how does he do that filling? He does it really through three ways. Number one, through his word. Through his word. How does he fill or nourish us through his word? As we study, what happens? Our faith grows. Our faith increases. The more we study, the stronger our faith becomes. The more knowledge we have of God, the more we can become like him. And so there is an automatic process that takes place. So we are filled through his word. We are filled also through his spirit, which the scriptures promise us that we will have, which comes primarily through the word, but he says is within us. But then, number three, and the one we often don't think about, but this is the one that Jesus is referring to here in this particular passage in our text, John 21, and that is, he fills us through his people. God uses his people to nourish his people. And that's exactly what he's telling Peter to do, isn't it? He's telling Peter, "Peter, nourish my people. Feed my lambs. Give them what they need." But in order to truly be able to be nourished, there has to be a hunger. Because feeding is in a response to a need or a hunger. Jesus said, "Blessed are those who," what? "Hunger and thirst for righteousness." And so the feeding is in a direct response to a need. I'm going to venture off here a little bit and want to ask you to listen to some product slogans and see if you can tell me what products they're advertising. They're pretty simple. The first one, "It's the real thing." Coke. Okay. "When you care enough to send the very best." Hallmark. Now, this one's, the younger ones may not get this one. "Where's the beef?" Wendy's. Okay. "Can you hear me now?" Verizon. Now, these on the surface, you may not really think about it, but advertising is not so much about promoting the product as it is creating a need. If you look at each of these slogans, they are trying to create a need. Advertisers recognize that need sells product. And so they're seeking to establish a need. In the case of "It's the Real Thing," they're appealing to your desire for authenticity. You want something that's real. Pepsi's fake. You know, it's not the real thing. It's a knockoff. You know, you want that which is real. You have a need for authenticity. Now, when "you care enough to send the very best," they're appealing to your need to send quality. Anything else is not going to be good enough. You need to send that which is very best. Each one of these appeals to a specific need. They're seeking to create a need. Why? Because people respond to need. If I hunger for something, what am I going to do? I'm going to seek to meet that hunger, aren't I? You know, if I wake up in the middle of the night and my stomach's growling and I'm hungry, I'm going to go into the kitchen and I'm going to look for something to fill that hunger. Jesus said, "Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness." Why? Because they are going to seek to be filled. If they truly hunger and thirst, they will find it. And he tells Peter now in John 21, he says, "Peter, feed them." There's a specific call, but also notice here that his call to feed the lambs is also a demonstration of his love. He says, "Peter, do you love me? Then feed my lambs." So our call tonight is, do you love Jesus? Then you do his work. You do what he's called you to do. Love is demonstrated through obedience. And so here we have a direct call to demonstrate our love for Jesus Christ. Now the second call here, we have, first of all, he says, feed my lambs. The second time, he says, tend my sheep, the New King James says, or feed my sheep. But the emphasis here is not on the feeding, but instead it is on shepherding. It is on the idea of shepherding. Now, how is shepherding different from feeding? Shepherding, does it include feeding? But is it only feeding? No, it includes all kinds of things, doesn't it? It includes grooming, rescuing, preventing danger, mending wounds, directing. You know, has anyone here ever raised a sheep? Okay, there's one back here. We'll talk later because I have too. I grew up in Mount Dora, which isn't the country, but nonetheless, I was not growing up on a farm or anything like that. But when my boys were younger, we got involved in 4-H. And we had a little bit of property at the time, and so somehow we were talked into raising sheep. And I do mean talked into. It was not the wisest decision that I've ever made. But I have decided that I personally think that it ought to be a requirement for every Christian to raise a lamb. It just ought to be an automatic requirement. Because it opens your eyes to understanding why Jesus over and over again used the analogy and used the illustrations of shepherding and comparing us to being lambs and sheep. You see, I learned a couple of things about sheep and raising them. One thing I learned as a side note, and this isn't one of them, but it's not real good for your marriage to try to raise them. But there are two specific things I learned about sheep. Number one is that they are completely focused on themselves. A sheep only thinks about the sheep. He doesn't think about anything else. And there's a little known fact about sheep that you may not know, and that is that they're one of the few animals, actually the only one that I know of, that could literally eat itself to death. If you just give it all the food that it wants, if you just put feed out there and just give it all that it wants all the time, it will literally eat itself to death because it doesn't know when it's full. And so he will eat and eat and eat. And that's why if you put a lamb out in or a sheep out in a pen, he is going to eat every piece of vegetation within a few days. There will be nothing left because he's focused completely on himself. That's all about him. Second thing I learned about sheep is that they blend into their environment. You know, sheep are very adaptable. You wouldn't think that about them, but we had an opportunity in our 4-H group. There was one of our members who had a farm, and they raised goats and they raised cattle. And so we took two sheep. We put one with their goats. There were lambs, actually. We took one lamb, put it with the goats, and one lamb put it out there with the cattle. And wouldn't you know that within a matter of a month or so, they began acting like the animals they were with? The lamb that was with the goats began acting just like a goat. He was climbing on top of stuff and acting crazy, act just like the goats that he was with. The one that was with the cattle out there acted just like a cow. Just kind of stood around eating grass, not really doing much of anything. You know, they adapt to the environment that they are around. Now let me ask you, does that sound like any other creature that God created? Sounds a lot like man, doesn't it? We have a tendency when it comes to spiritual things, if we're not careful, we can be focused upon ourselves. That's why we see in the religious world, and we even see creeping into the Lord's church today, a focus on worship that is self-oriented. It's all about entertaining self. And we've encountered it, I'm sure you have down here, but we're struggling with it in our area, up in the Orlando area now, of congregations that are moving towards this idea of entertainment. Why? Because it takes care of my personal need. What I think I need, it meets that need for me. And so it's all about me rather than my worship that I'm offering to God. But we also have a tendency to blend in to the environments or our surroundings. And if we're not careful, we can fit in to the world in such a way that they don't even realize that we're Christians. What is the primary way they identify us as Christians, by the way? By our love. They will know that we are Christians by the love that we show. And yet we can very easily blend into the world. That is why we need a shepherd. We need shepherding because we have a tendency to act like sheep. And so Jesus says here to Peter, Peter, be a shepherd to my sheep. Be a shepherd. Meet their needs. Groom them, rescue them, prevent them from danger. Mend their wounds, direct their path. Jesus was telling Peter to take care of God's people. But this also was an act or demonstration of God, of Peter's love for Christ. Peter, do you love me? Then Peter, take care of my sheep. Shepherd them. But finally, notice that in each one of these occasions, in each one of these situations, that as Peter was told, do you love me? The command remained the same regardless of Peter's response. Regardless of what Peter said, Jesus said, Peter, do you have a complete commitment to me? Peter said, I have a strong affection for you, Lord. Feed my lambs. Peter, do you have a total commitment for me? I have a strong affection for you, Lord. Tend my sheep. You see, the command was the same, regardless of Peter's level of love. And I think that's important for us to recognize tonight, because sometimes it is hard for us to truly be objective in knowing our level of love for Christ, because we tend to look at the emotional side. We tend to look at the emotional end of that love, and as a result, we sometimes get skewed. We have this idea of, you know, did I fall in love with Jesus? I read an article not long ago by a fellow preacher that the title of the article was Why I Fell in Love with Jesus. And while I understood the premise of the article, I disagreed with the title. I don't believe that we fall in love with Jesus. Because if we fall in love, we can also what? Fall out of it. I can, if I fall in, I fall out. Love is a decision. I decide that I am going to love Jesus. And when I decide that I love Jesus, then I decide that I'm going to do the things, act of obedience, that demonstrate that love. And the more that I grow, then the stronger that love becomes. Yes, there are emotions that are involved. But regardless, I focus on a decision to love Him. Tonight, is your love for Christ weaker than it has been in the past? Then get busy in the kingdom. Has your love stopped maturing? Then get busy in the kingdom. Does your love for Christ need to be restored? Be busy in the kingdom. You see, regardless of your situation, the command is the same. Obey. Do the will of God. I want to close tonight. We're out of time. And again, I appreciate so much the opportunity to be with you. But I want to close tonight by simply reading 1 John chapter 3, beginning in verse 16. And we won't have this on the screen. But I believe that this really sums up what we're talking about tonight. 1 John chapter 3, we'll read verses 16 through 24. By this we know love, because he laid down his life for us. And we also ought to lay down our lives for the brethren. But whoever has this world's goods and sees his brother in need and shuts up his heart from him, how does the love of God abide in him? My little children, let us not love in word or in tongue, but in deed and in truth. And by this we know that we are of the truth and shall assure our hearts before him. For if our heart condemns us, God is greater than our heart and knows all things. Beloved, if our heart does not condemn us, we have confidence toward God. And whatever we ask, we receive from him, because we keep his commandments and do the things that are pleasing in his sight. And this is his commandment, that we should believe on the name of his Son, Jesus Christ, and love one another as he gave us commandment. Now he who keeps his commandments abides in him, and he in him. And by this we know that he abides in us, by the Spirit whom he has given us.